supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. You know, for men, there are times when there's nothing like opening up to another guy.
Look, man, it was 1 second of doubt, okay? Since when do you care what anybody else thinks?
I don't. I care what you think. Since the day I met you, you treated me like I was the man, like I could accomplish everything.
That was a clip from the TV comedy Scrubs. The characters, Turk and JD, are known for their many intimate conversations. They admittedly love each other and, quote, lean on their very close friendship to surf through life's highs and lows at Sacred Heart Teaching Hospital. Well, men and emotional intimacy, that's the topic of today's show, and that is not an oxymoron. We're going to explore the benefits of these close personal relationships between men, how these relationships have a positive impact on mental health and can improve relationships of all kinds. We'll ask the question, are we redefining what it means to be masculine, or are we just shooting something for something that we consider ideal? We've got my guests now are Rob Garfield and Jay Krieger. Rob Garfield's a psychiatrist and family therapist. He's an assistant clinical professor at the Department of Psychiatry here at University of Pennsylvania. And he's here in the studio with us. Rob, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here, Dan.
Jay Krieger is a social worker in private practice in Bala Cynwyd. He, too, joins us in the studio. Jake, welcome.
Thanks, Dan. Nice to be here.
These two guys I haven't seen in about 20 years, and we used to work closely together, so it's nice to be them with them. Later on, we're going to hear from Robert Heasley. He's an assistant professor at the Department of Sociology at Indiana University of Pennsylvania and a president of the Men's Studies Association. We'll hear from him in just a few minutes. And, of course, we want to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 888-477-9499. Tell us your experience of male relationships. I'm going to hear about your buddies and what that relationship's like for you. Rob, I just got home from a long weekend trip with two of my closest friends. We saw two Phillies games in Baltimore. Had a good time despite the outcome of the games. We ate good food, laughed hard, did whatever we could to torture one another. We went from three respected professionals to the Three Stooges. It was really great fun. But when I hear stories of women going away from their girlfriends, what I hear uniformly is they sat around the hotel room and talked all day. And I'm thinking, I would die if that's what we did. So what's the difference between us? How do men do intimacy with one another? Do you guys sit around and talk over coffee, or do you do stuff?
Well, in our relationship, we do both, but we're friends for a long, long time. I think it's true for most men that they start out with relationships that tend to be based on doing things together, having a good time together, so it's action-oriented. One of the limits, though, that men have found is that when other things come up, if there's a problem in the relationship or something that's going on personally with them in their lives, there's some illness or problems with their kids, that they tend not to feel comfortable sharing those things. And that's the kind of thing we are focusing on more.
You know, excuse me, I want to come back to the Phillies. Anybody who's a Phillies fan knows that Jimmy Rollins took a 3-day paternity leave last month when his child was born. This was the maximum time allowed by baseball. 10 years ago, this was unheard of. And now their star player took off at a time when they need their players. He took off without a whisper of criticism. Are times really changing?
I definitely think so. Definitely think that times are changing. Seeing more men who are interested in parenting their children, being more involved with their children, actually fathering their children, and not leaving it all to mom and running off to work. So the emotional connection that fathers want with their sons and their daughters is much more prevalent now than it was 20 years ago.
Well, we've got Robert Heasley on the phone, and like I said, he's with the Department of Sociology at Indiana University. He's president of the Men's Studies Association. Robert, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Dan, and thanks for having me on.
What is the Men's Studies Association?
It's an organization, a national organization, of those of us who are teaching in the field of men's studies, as well as clinicians like Jake and Rob, who are doing work with men, and really wanted to organize sort of a way of communicating with each other about the work that we're doing, the research we're doing on men's lives, in order to be able to share information and enhance what we're doing as teachers, as professors, as clinicians.
You you teach courses on men and masculinity.
I was thinking about what you were just saying about the changes in men's lives and what Jake had mentioned about men are changing around fathering. And I started teaching a men's studies course, a men's lives course, about 20 years ago when I was teaching at the University of Alaska, actually. And at that time, only women were taking my course. And they did it because they wanted to understand the men in their lives. And now I teach it, and I get about half the class is men and half are women. And the men are taking it because they want to understand their own lives. And so I'm, like Jed, very encouraged about changes that men are doing.
Well, I want to follow up with just that, Robert. So let's talk about the young men you're talking about now, that you teach now. How were they raised?
Yeah, I'm doing some interviews, actually, with men who are saying they were in my classes and finding out how they were raised and why they are taking the classes and why they're thinking about themselves differently. And to a large extent, I'm finding men are saying either one of two things. One is that they were raised by fathers who were nurturing and who cared about them a lot, and they wanted to make sure that they continued the same sort of thing with their own children and in their own lives and relationships. And then I'm also finding men coming into my class who are very difficult, distant, sometimes emotionally or physically abusive fathers who didn't look up to, and they wanted to make a change, and they didn't have models, or they didn't understand what they could do, and they're finding my course or courses at other campuses that are letting them think about their masculinity, think about being men and how they want to be as men. So they come from two different worlds. You know, one is the supportive, nurturing parent, father, and strong mothers who are really clear about giving them their son support, about being non-traditional in terms of looking at emotional awareness, emotional intelligence, as well as the young males who really have had difficult relationships with their fathers and trying to look for a different path.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the men who were raised by emotionally distant fathers. Rob, I want to turn to you as a family therapist. Men don't know what they're missing. I remember 35 years ago, I was treating a family in my office. My daughter, Allie, my firstborn, just went from a crib to a bed. And my wife had stepped out, and I was treating this family, and I was a young family therapist. And I was talking to the father about his relationship with his father, and he was saying, well, everything was fine, there was no problems there. And all of a sudden I hear a thud on the floor, and Allie fell out of bed, and she was crying, and there was nobody home but me. It was before my accident, so I go running up the steps, and I pick her up, and I'm not going to throw her back into bed, so I bring her down with me. So I hold her on my lap, and she's resting her head on my chest. She's sucking her thumb and falling back to sleep. And I turned to the father, and I said, where were we? And he said, we're talking about how much I missed my father. Mm-hmm. So we don't know what we're missing. Right?
I think that this is really typical, and it's so interesting in the groups that Jake and I have been running together for the last 18, 19 years. It looks on the surface that when the men come in, their wives tell them they have to, or they feel like they have to be there. But when they come in, that kind of contact that they get from each other, the kind of support that a man gets from another man, and the hunger, the kind of yearning that they feel for what they would have liked to have got, what they wanted to say, what they still want to say and never could say to the fathers that they had, is very powerful. And we're trying to make that a kind of an open access to the men. And they're hungry for it. They really want this.
You can tell how hungry they are by how much head nodding goes on in the room. Mm-hmm. There's a lot mm-hmm. of men, heads that are nodding up and down. Oh, yeah, I recognize that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about men and intimate relationships and, how men open up to each other and what it means. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. That's 888-477-9499. Let's go to the phones. We've got Keith on the line. Hey, Keith.
Hello, Dan. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
I know you're going to spend your time thinking about emotional bonds between men and male friends. Back in my 20s, I'm approaching my 60th birthday. Back in my 20s, I had a series of male friends that came through school or through business. One of the fellows who came through school, who I was very supportive of, the kind of guy who would throw him a surprise party when he was leaving town, leaving the country for a year to study, who stayed in touch with his wife, was just a very supportive friend. A couple years go by after his return to this country, and he stopped returning my phone calls and just dropped it. I had a friend from the business community who was very, very tight with and was at a point in his life where I was, again, being supportive of him in ways that he was voicing. Other people were not. An invitation to get together, one of those invitations for dinner was never returned, and it just went. There's a third person from the school days in the 20s who at some point decided that he was not going to trust me anymore because he was getting into some kind of dicey things and wanted to suck me into it, and I didn't want to be involved. All of which to say, three out of my four strong male friendships after the age of 18 up to, say, 30, 32, all dissolved through what I believe is their desertion. Now, if you want to tie some dots together, I never knew my father. He deserted my mother and I before I was born. So these days, I don't take the trouble to dig up, to befriend, to get involved with anybody that I meet through whatever channels, so I don't have the friend that I go to the ball game with to go over to the house to watch the ball game, who I talk to once, two, three times a week.
Keith.
Presence in my life is just not there, and even though I miss it, and I know there's something that's not there, I'm okay with it. I'm sort of resolved. I've just given into that and saying, okay, there's my life. That's how it is.
Before I turn this over to Rob Garfield, who's anxious to get into this, tell me what you would like.
I think it would be nice to have the guy that you talk to once a week. Well, how's the wife doing? How's your wife doing? Oh, the kids, all the work. So you want to come over and watch the ball game?
Okay.
Do you want to do some things that the wives are not able to do or not interested in doing. The typical stuff that guys will talk about in that kind of relationship.
So now,
it might be heavy duty. Well, let me tell you about my wife. Or it might be, let's watch the ball game.
So now we know what you want. And to me, the important question is, how do we get there? Now let's turn to the expert. Rob Garfield?
Well, my heart goes out to you, Keith. I think, and we've talked about this a lot with guys, you know, who have had close male relationships and then they lose these. And one of the things as men that we're not really very good at is being able to follow through and figure out what happened. When things get tough, a lot of the times separations occur and we're not very good at following through and figuring out what happened. And these losses hurt a lot more than a lot of guys really want to admit. I'm working on a book now called How Men Can Make and Keep Close Male Friendships. I want to underscore the keep part in there, because the how you actually follow up and repair relationships is pretty important. Sometimes life just takes us on different courses and we grow out of relationships, but we need to know how we can repair these things, and if we can't, not to give up. You know, there are a bunch of guys out there who are probably happy to be your friend.
How so, though? I mean, so Keith might know that in the abstract, but that's not doing him any good. I want to press all three of you on Keith's behalf. So here he is, approaching 60. We have to trust that he's got some wisdom now, and you know, old issues that young men have, by and large, are gone. He's ready. He's open. Now what?
Right.
Now what? Is there any answers to now what, Jake?
Well, Keith, I want to say to you that it's worth the phone call to these guys, just on the basis of what do you got to lose? You have so much to gain in being able to be open with them and being able to talk with them. What do you got to lose by calling them and saying, hey, I'd really like to get together with you? And there are also lots of other men out there. I want to, you know, let you know that there are more men than you think out there who are interested in going to a ball game and also having a reasonable, intimate conversation with you about their wives and their children and their frustrations.
How do we find them? Where do we make these connections?
Well, there are groups around. And they're also just being open when you get together with socially with other families, inviting people, inviting guys to get together. They're around.
Keith, let me suggest something also. I mean, these relationships are, you know, many years old now, maybe even decades from your description. But, you know, I'm really not all that good at initiating contact. It's just my style. I'm very good at responding to contact. I had a guy call me, it's got to be about 10, 15 years ago, and he said, you know, Dan, you don't call me, and I want you to know that our relationship is very important to me. That changed everything. You know, that's all I needed to hear. And, you know, we've been dear friends ever since. So, you know, we need to be, all of us, a bit more open, not honest, but a bit more open and vulnerable with one another. Easier said than done. Keith, thanks so much for your call. Guys, we've got to take a short break. We'll be back in 60 seconds. We're talking about men and close relationships, and it's a really important and complicated topic. We'd love to hear from you. Our number is 888-477-9499. We're with psychiatrist Rob Garfield, social worker Jake Krieger, and Robert Hensley, an assistant professor of sociology at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Like I said, our number is 888-477-9499. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and you're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY-FM.
Penn supports WHYY. Do you frequently walk into a room and immediately forget why? Do you need to write things down to remember them? Is multitasking harder than it used to be? If this sounds familiar, you may qualify for a research study focusing on cognition and memory in menopausal women. The Penn Center for Women's Behavioral Wellness is seeking women between the ages of 48 and 60 to participate in research to study the effects of certain hormones and medication on cognition in peri- and postmenopausal women. For more information, 215-41-STUDY.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
We are back. Excuse me, we're back on Voices in the Family. We're talking about men and intimate relationships with my guests, Rob Garfield, Jake Krieger, and Robert Heasley. Before we get back to our discussion and your calls, let's listen to something. Our intern, Jerome Gallman, recently sat down with his friend, Cheney University student Elijah Mullins. Jerome asked him, is it easier or not to say I love you to a male or a female? And with a male, is it assumed that you love them?
It's definitely easier for a male to be assumed, and then for the female, you kind of have to say it because females tend to want to hear it. And they tend to need to hear it in order to understand it. It's not just going to be assumed. And that's how a lot of people mess up in life. It's like with a female, if I don't say I love you, but they say I love you, then it's a whole different type of battle because she's trying to figure out, well, does he really love me, or was my love too strong and he felt too, I don't know, it's hard to explain. I know for a fact, though, that as far as men go, men don't walk around saying I love you, even though it could be your brother or whatever. It's assumed. You know, and the other person knows. And that's, I don't know, it's kind of, it's something that can't be explained. It's just human nature.
Just human nature. Is it assumed? Are male relationships less complicated than male-female relationships? Professor Heasley. What's your take on this?
Thanks, Dan. This is really a rich conversation, and I was reflecting on Keith's comments earlier as well. And one of the things that I think men receive too often is an absent father or a history of relationships with males where nothing is verbalized about loving. The words aren't there, and the attention isn't there as well. So the feeling of abandonment, the risk-taking, if I say I love him, then he, you know, he finds me too gushy or he finds me too much, I'm not going to say it. So it's almost like I won't say it to you if you don't say it to me. And while there is sort of a dance that males do, and even close male friends will do things that indicate love but not name it, the down is fine. But the downside of it is that there's also then the conversation doesn't go on about what does this relationship mean to you? Am I important to your life? What do you like about me? And why you keep showing up in my life? And that conversation is the kind of conversation I think you were indicating you had from your friend who called you and said, I really want to be close to you. I want to be a friend with you. The outreaching. But most boys growing up, many boys, I don't say most, but many boys growing up never hear that conversation from their father, never hear the I love you, or from their brothers, or from their close male friends after they're in third, fourth, fifth grade, because that language isn't allowed. And then we begin to think, well, it's natural that guys don't talk to each other like that. But for guys who grow up in families with fathers, with males in their lives, who have that conversation, who express those kinds of emotion openly, then they think it's natural to be able to do it. And so we can't do what we don't experience. And then what we don't experience, we think, and then what we end up doing because we don't experience the loving language or the interactions that really share emotions, we end up feeling like, oh, well, they're not necessary in our lives. But like Rob and Jake, I have a clinical practice in media where I see clients, and I find men a lot saying, you know, my father never told me he loved me. I don't expect to be loved by other guys. I turn to women for that kind of conversation, for that kind of communication. And that's sort of where I think the beginning point is in creating a new conversation between men.
I just want to jump in here for a minute and just say that I think the language is creeping into our culture. You'll hear guys talk to each other and say, I love you, man. I love you, bro. You know, I love you. They won't say, I love you.
Right.
And they certainly won't say it the way they say it to a woman. But they might want that more just by saying it. It's more open and more accessible to them. So it is creeping, but it is coming into our culture. I see it.
Rob, you know, there's an article in just this June edition of the APA, or RAPA, American Psychological Association Monitor, that raises the question, are we redefining masculinity? Are we as a culture?
I think we absolutely are redefining masculinity. And there are a number of reasons. I think some of them really have to do with generations. Some of them have to do with where feminism has brought us right now, which is, you know, to really humanize ourselves more. And some of it just really has to do with the health information that's coming in about men trying to continue to, you know, meet the standards of classic masculinity, which are really bad for your health.
How so?
Well, if you take a look at some of the things that we look at as what it means to be a successful man, playing it close to the best, being competitive, okay, you know, don't be vulnerable, don't show these things. It's pretty clear that over time you could make a lot of money and be well admired, but these things really hurt in terms of blood pressure. They hurt in terms of recovery from injuries. It hurts in terms of relationships with family members. And so men are really taking a look at some of the costs, the health costs, mental and physical costs, of trying to live up to these kinds of standards.
Well, when you talk about the larger culture, we do have a role to play. We are expected to be the provider, be the one who gets taken care of, who takes care of. And you know, I wonder, you know, if that's just the culture or if some of it's our wiring. You know, one of my closest friends in the world is 4 years old, and he's lived with me for the first 4 years of his life, and along with his single mother. And, you know, she got him, you know, a kitchen set for his room, and he loved it. And she got him dolls, and he loved that. And she got him, you know, a truck, and he loved that too. But by the time he became two and a half, he owned, first it was trash trucks, then it was school buses, and then it was spaceships, and now he's in love with trains. And trains and Lincoln Logs. He likes to build things, right?
There are definitely some biological differences, but socialization creeps in really, really quickly with boys and with girls. And by the time kids are in the early ages of elementary school, you really see these differences there. And, you know, those of us who have gone through boyhood, like myself, you know, I loved my boyhood, and there are many wonderful things that I liked about those classical identifications. I think that the problem is that they wear thin over time. We don't really get to be complete and whole, and when we need to be, in those times when we really need to connect with other people, when we need to open up, when we need to say, I hurt, when we need to say, I don't know, when we need to say these kinds of things, there's no words for that because, you know, the shutter comes down about being a man. And these are the things I think we need to address. And I think that there is a change now. Guys are really saying, maybe there isn't just one way to be a successful man. Maybe there are many ways. Maybe there are many masculinities. There's not just one. And we're encouraging that.
We're talking about men and intimate relationships. The voice you just heard was Rob Garfield. He's a psychiatrist, family therapist, and clinical professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Jake Krieger is here in the studio with me also. He's a social worker in private practice. Robert Heasley is an assistant professor at the Department of Sociology at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. And our phone number is 888-477-9499. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Peter on the line.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hey. Good. I just had a comment and a question as a result of my observations. I'm in my middle 50s, and over the years and over the decades, I have recognized the need to have strong male bonding with just a few guys. And I have it with one gentleman who is as close to me as a brother, but in most, if not all, the other instances, I have close friends that I consider to be close, and I'm always the one extending of myself relative to going to a ball game or getting together for some other reason and just enjoying each other's company, and it's never reciprocated, never, ever. And I'm just wondering how long you think, you know, I just feel resentful to that point, and I'm wondering how long before I give up the ghost, so to speak.
All right, let's turn to some clinicians here, because I don't think you're going to get a lot of support for giving up the ghost here.
No, I don't think you should give up the ghost. I think actually, I mean, what's wonderful is voicing this, because these are the kinds of issues that are really critical in terms of being able to maintain and, you know, nurture a friendship. There are going to be situations where, like you're experiencing, where you feel like you're putting out way too much. And then the question will come up, if I bring this up with my friend, will he abandon me? Will he get angry and just leave? Or can I risk bringing this up with him and saying, hey, you know, I've called the last 5 times. How about if you give me a call the next time? That would really mean a lot to me. And those are the risk-taking times, but I think that's where the investment that makes the relationship a deeper kind of relationship goes, and it's risky.
Peter, does that sound reasonable to you?
Well, it sounds reasonable, but the problem is I think to myself that they're just doing it from an obligatory type of posturing, that it's not really heartfelt, and that's the thing that I'm scared to address.
Mm-hmm. What are you scared of?
Well, the fact that they would, if I brought that up, they would be resentful of the fact, well, you know, like, I'm only doing it to be nice to you, and I don't really need you in my life to the extent that you need me and yours.
It is. You know what? You're damn right. It is scary to open up and be vulnerable to anybody, let alone another guy. Do you think you could turn to this guy and tell him that this relationship is important to you, you value it, you enjoy it, and you want it to continue? Could you take that risk?
I guess it depends on the friend that I'm talking about. In some instances, I could do it. In others, I would be hesitant to do it.
Yeah, I would encourage you to do it. And depending on the relationship, I mean, feel free to put your arm around your friend and tell him from the bottom of your heart he's a pain in the butt. You know, I mean, that helps.
You know, Peter, this is Rob. I'm smiling as I'm listening to the story because it's so familiar, and I so want you to make that contact with your friend. You know, the groups that we've been running for the last 18 years, this is the kind of issue that comes up every single time where the guys are scared, and they all agree that it's scary to do that. But when one person, you know, will stick out his neck and say, this really made me mad, or this really makes me upset, or I'm really worried about you, in so few cases does anything negative come out mm-hmm. from that. The guys really appreciate your doing it, even though it seems like it's the scariest thing to do. So I have to back Dan.
I want to add in also, Peter, that you're in good company. In all the groups that we do, almost everybody in the group says, it's okay to call me. I'd love for anybody in the group to call me. But in terms of actually initiating a call to someone else, they all are very shy or not apt to do that, but not about to do that. But in terms of receiving phone calls, everybody's very willing to do that. So you're in good company in terms of wanting that.
When we come back, I want to talk about those groups that you run, who comes and how the groups go. And I also want to talk about men and loss and how we do express our more tender, vulnerable feelings. We're talking about men and intimacy and maybe even intimacy with ourselves. My guests are Robert Heasley. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. Jake Krieger is a social worker in private practice. Rob Garfield is a psychiatrist, clinical professor at the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm Dan Gottlieb. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY.
Penn supports WHYY. Do you frequently walk into a room and immediately forget why? Do you need to write things down to remember them? Is multitasking harder than it used to be? If this sounds familiar, you may qualify for a research study focusing on cognition and memory in menopausal women. The Penn Center for Women's Behavioral Wellness is seeking women between the ages of 48 and 60 to participate in research to study the effects of certain hormones and medication on cognition in peri- and postmenopausal women. For more information, 215-41-STUDY.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
And we are back.
You flatter me by giving me this award, and I thank you. But I tell you, here and now, I accept this for Brian Piccolo. It's mine tonight, but it's Brian Piccolo's tomorrow. I love Brian Piccolo, and I want you to love him.
For those of you who don't know that, that was a clip from the 2001 version of the movie Brian Song. It's the story of professional football players Gale Sayers and Brian Piccolo, and it's how their friendship off and on the field was affected when Piccolo contracted a fatal disease. It truly is a love story. And that's what we're talking about. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and this is Voices in the Family, and we're talking about intimate relationships between men and maybe even love between men, how that's felt and how it's experienced and expressed. Let's go right to the phone, gentlemen. We've got Sean on the line. Hey, Sean.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi. I must say, I was in my car listening, and I kind of welled up because I have a lot of empathy for your last two callers. The one gentleman who felt abandoned by his friend, and the guy, I certainly understand him, being afraid to make those calls, but I'm 59 years old, and I belong to this AA group. And I found myself in the AA group with seven guys that I knew, drank with, used with, and we became a core group and core friends. So we've been friends for 40 years. And, I have that kind of relationship with those people. I also have it with my brothers, where we embrace, kiss, and hug if we haven't seen each other for a long time. And, you know, it certainly is worth the effort. You're responsible for the effort, not the result. But normally the effort is worth it. And
Sean, did you grow up
I just never realized how blessed I truly am.
Yeah. It's nice when we do all wake up to that. Were you always this kind of guy, or when you were younger, were you more of a, quote, traditional?
Well, you know, I grew up in a family of eight, the middle child, and, you know, my father was a man's man, if you follow what I mean. No, there wasn't a lot of hugging and kissing from him. Fortunately, I had a mother that was a completely different person and gave each and every one of us whatever it is we have. And, you know, my father, when he got older, I'll never forget the first time I kissed and hugged him and told him I loved him. And he teared up and said the same thing to me. And he and I didn't get along very well. But like the gentleman before, he seems to be, I was the same way. I was the one reaching out. But if you do that, you find that there are other people out there that want that. I mean, I have, you know, I'm a bachelor, like I said. All my friends are married. So when I thought I was abandoned, it's just that their lives took different directions. They didn't forget me.
Yeah,
I came down with non-Hodgkin's, a form of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that there is no cure for. And, I mean, they came out of the woodwork. It was just, you know, and people said, how did you get through 3 years of chemo? And it was like, I looked at the doctor, and when he told me, I said, okay. And it's been just that ever since. I mean, I'm surrounded. I'm surrounded. I'm being held up. I'm being loved. And I just sometimes lose sight of how blessed I am.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so happy for you. You know, Robert, you know, vulnerability begets compassion and kindness, and strength and independence begets distance. But, you know, it's so hard for us to be vulnerable. I mean, all messages come out to say, you know, I had a man tell me he was, a high-ranking officer in an organization. He said, if anybody knew that I was insecure, they would cut me off at the knees. I mean, that's the message out there. How do we begin to change that?
Dan, I could just add that you're on to something that's really important, I think, and that is about being vulnerable. And even as the previous callers, certainly Peter and Keith, are saying, it's hard and it's risk-taking. But if somebody doesn't know our needs and desires, they have a hard time, they can't respond to them. And vulnerability is about showing up as both strong people as well as people that are real and have real needs that we need to communicate. We can't expect somebody else to read us. And particularly for men in relationships, there is so clearly little training in our lives overall in our culture that males experience growing up in close, loving, affectionate relationships from other males. And when those happen, and for those that it happened to, it's much easier a road to go down in terms of looking for those and opening up to those relationships as adults. But in some ways, we have to invent the lives we want to have and pursue it. And if on the first try it doesn't work, then try again and keep going, knowing that these are the kinds of friends you want. And if they can't respond to your need, then pursue new friends and keep going, trusting that it's possible.
Mm. Rob, after earlier on in the show, during one of the breaks, you said it was important to talk about men and loss. How right. come?
I think that we're sort of uniquely poorly trained to deal with loss from the very beginning. Dad doesn't come home. He's out working, so don't miss him. You know, if something bad happens to you, there's an injury, just suck it up. It'll go away. I mean, we're really used to stealing ourselves in the name of becoming a man and being a good man, to not noticing things that hurt us. And when we lose these kinds of contacts, we're supposed to be able to go out and do those kinds of things. And when we then really have to deal with these kinds of losses, we don't have we don't have the words to say it, and we don't have the words to repair. And we don't have the words to let people know that we miss them. And that really needs to change. That's what we focus on a lot in our groups.
We did a show recently on crying.
And Jay Efren, right?
Yeah, what it was and how it works. And a woman called in and her marriage was in jeopardy because they lost a child. She cried, and she wasn't seeing her husband grieving and felt that he wasn't feeling. Now, we could conjecture all we want about what might have been going on with this guy, but men do it differently. We're not encouraging men to experience and express their feelings like women. We're encouraging them to express it like men do.
We're encouraging them to express feelings. Men are men. They're not women. But they are human beings. And I think what Jay was talking about last week, which I thought, by the way, was a marvelous show, you know, was about tapping into that capacity, which is really a human capacity, and makes us more connectable with each other. And that's what we're trying to say. And sort of redefine masculinity, saying, you know, crying is not girl stuff. Crying is human stuff. Crying makes us more connectable. And just the same way that we can, when we tough it out and when we push through and when we're successful, that's a good thing too. You know, we're not trying to change genders here. We're trying to expand capacity for humanness.
Jake?
Yeah. The first part of being able to express a feeling for a guy is to first recognize that it's there. And what we do in our groups is being able to articulate that. So a lot of the work that they do in the groups is kind of seeing it as a laboratory setting where they get to do their Donald Duck thing where they have a feeling and they just don't know how to express it. So what happens in the group is they actually experiment with being able to say it. Based on, like I said earlier, all the head nods that go on, they get a lot of support recognizing, oh, you have trouble expressing that too? And that works really well for, that's why this, so I'm enjoying hearing these callers call in about their struggles with having men in their lives, because it's valuable to have other men in them who are in the same condition that they're in.
Let's talk about how these relationships affect all other relationships in men's lives, close, not so close, and you know, other intimate relationships with women.
The guys who come to the group, you know, all come, you know, with a lot of responsibilities in their lives. So to take time out to come to these groups is a very big deal. Once they come, almost uniformly, spouses, partners are very happy that they're coming, because while they're with a group of men, the encouragement is to bring back what's really in their hearts, what's really going on, and find words to connect with the important people. So a lot of talk about what's going on in the marriage, but not as an escape, but to be able to better articulate the feelings, problems with the kids that are going on, sharing what did you do, what do I do, how do we work with these, and having a male group there who are in the same pot, in the same stew, really makes a big difference.
Well, what about cultural issues? You know, there's differences here. I mean, you know, different cultures define being a man differently.
They do. They
different
do.
Socioeconomic groups do also.
Right. The groups.
There's a lot of. If I could just
sure.
jump into that,
Robert, please.
There are cultural differences, and there are, you know, it's important to recognize them. And I'm thinking as Rob is and Jake are sharing what happens with groups, and what you were saying earlier about men and emotions. You know, we're actually humans. Men and women are more alike than we are different, and many of our cultures have really stressed differences, and much of it has been sort of based on sort of old theories and ideas about men are from Mars or women are from Venus. But the reality is that we're just humans having a struggle with trying to communicate and be with each other. And for some classes of people, for some ethnic groups, there's so much pressure on, you know, in the inner city black community, for instance, that I've done some work with, that there's such a pressure to perform a type of masculinity, and it's true of male culture in general, to perform a masculinity that makes sure that you're not going to be hurt again. And I think that when we play that out, when we play it out at the executive level of, you know, highly powerful men sort of saying, no one's going to get to my emotions, we really shut off the possibility of having deep connections, marriages that have a lot of communication, marriages that have a lot of openness for vulnerability, commitment to our children and being letting our children be vulnerable, letting our sons be vulnerable. So it really is looking at, well, the culture says I should be this way, but what's the human way of being, and what would benefit me in terms of the mental health and physical health and relational health that I want in my life? And that's sort of, we need to look at that as individuals and say, my reality is that I really am a human being having, you know, having an experience of being male, but it doesn't have to be in opposition to femaleness or what's perceived as feminine, and it needs to be what's important to humans.
You know, I wonder if couples should sit down, gay and straight couples should sit down in the beginning of a relationship and say, well, what roles are we going to play? What does it mean to be you? Where are we going to place vulnerability in this marriage? Rob, we've got a couple of seconds left.
I think that those issues are important, you know, across cultures. One great example was just at the recent American Family Therapy Association conference, Dave Walsifer, who's a colleague of ours, and I did a workshop on homophobia. And the interviewee group were both gay and straight guys. And it really came out that homophobia was an issue that was problematic across the boards, that any kind of, you know, negativity toward what it meant to be a man was harmful to people, period.
Sure, it sure is. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Given the number of callers and the level of discussion, we could go on for a couple of more hours. It's been wonderful. Thanks so much to all three of you. We've been talking about men and emotional intimacy with Rob Garfield, Jay Krieger, and Robert Heasley. Thanks again, all of you, for joining us. Next week, we'll be talking with Elaine Fox. She's the author of Rainy Brain, Sunny Brain, a book about optimism and pessimism. Well, you can reach me at drdangottlieb.com, or you can reach our production team at voices@whyy.org. Well, the engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perezun is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Jerome Gallman is our summer intern. Alexa Kazmorski helped us out today. Thanks, Alexa. Mike and Scott's our executive producer. Jennifer Lynn is our producer. Me, I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.
The Care Health System.